People have strong feelings about whether it's right or wrong to buy a house right now, whether it's a sell.
Do you want to be a landlord? Do you want to take on everybody else's problems plus your own?
Yeah. And so if you're going to buy a house and rent it for 10 years, 15 years, you can ride out any kind of downturn. I think there's like a part of the psychology there where this house has served its purpose and I don't want anything to do with it anymore. I just want to take my equity and go.
Sometimes it just doesn't make sense to rent out your house.
Should you just take the money and run?
Do you need the money?
And listen, if they need the money, they need the money.
Welcome back to Millennia, the no BS real estate solutions for millennials. Entertaining you while facing real life issues and giving you the tools, resources, and know-how to keep you moving up towards your housing goals. We're your hosts, Jen Inesky and Seth Lejeune, coming out of the greater Philadelphia area, and we are Millennia.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back to Millennia.
Welcome back to Millennia. So we are talking about investments today?
Yes, because everybody's been asking about it, because everybody would love to find a new way to start having passive income.
Yep.
And they don't know how, and they don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. They don't know of different ways to do it. So we're going to tell you.
Okay. So I am not going to go into every nitty gritty detail of each one of the categories I'm going to talk about, but I'm going to give a kind of a primer on what each one is and the pros and cons a little bit. If you feel like I'm rushing through it and you have any questions on anything specifically, you can always reach out to us through the Instagram page. Or
Millennia Podcast, Millennia. Double L, double N, double P, double everything.
That's right. And or on if you're watching this on YouTube, you can just reply in the comments below.
Be nice. Don't be nasty for no reason.
Yeah, we've been getting some comments and it's like...
Just the internet as a whole. God.
Yeah.
This is a platform where we'll talk about that.
And you know what? It's all men. It's all shithead men. We love you guys. But the
second
only
episode, you're hating on men. I love it.
The people that are commenting snarkily are men.
And I need to, bullshit. Even on just, you go through like Instagram reels and in general, and you go through comments and it's, why be nasty?
Yeah.
Why hide behind your keyboard? And there's real people on the other side of it. Yeah. Like, why do you just be such a nasty?
Every once in a while, Jen will text me and be like, did you see that comment? I don't care. No, people have strong feelings about whether it's right or wrong to buy a house right now, whether it's a sell. And then I've been getting more and more questions from past clients because they've already bought. They're not looking to sell or buy, but they were looking at potentially investing.
Hmm.
So what would you like to know about investing, Jen?
We can talk about probably the lesser, because everybody's heard of flips, which mm-hmm. we'll get to. People have heard of multi-unit, like rentals. What's the BRRRR method?
The BRRRR method?
Let's start with the BRRRR.
The BRRRR method. Do you know what the BRRRR method is?
Tell us.
You tell us? Okay. I'm going to back up. So I'm going to go over the things, the categories that I'm going to talk about. One is a flip. Flipping, if you've been watching HGTV at all, flipping has become that phrase and that word has become synonymous with you buy a house, you fix it up, and then you turn around and sell it. Almost never do you live in it. It's purely an investment play. Then you have what are called buy and holds, which is, hey, there's a property that I like. I want to rent it to a tenant and I buy and I essentially lease it. So sometimes you need to improve the property. Sometimes it's what we call turnkey.
So you're a landlord.
So you're just basically a landlord, put a sign in the front yard after settlement, and you're off and running. The other is a little bit more of an exotic application in investing, which is called the BRRRR method. People have been doing it forever, but I think until the Great Recession, I don't think anyone had actually used that phrase. And what BRRRR is it's B and then four R's. And it's buy, rehab, refinance, rent, and then repeat. So I will get into the details of that. And then we can talk a little bit, if we got time, about like multifamily syndication and that type of thing.
Airbnb. Well, because somebody asked you a really good question that would tie into this. Really,
which is
well,
the equity play. Okay. So we can talk about that as well. So I'm going to rip through these. Again, if you guys have any questions about any of this, please just leave a comment wherever you can find us on Instagram or YouTube. Or if you have our personal information, you can always just text us. So flips. Flips are essentially what they sound like. You buy a house, you fix it up, and then you throw it back on the market for a higher sum, and then you keep the difference. It's a great way to make cash quickly in this market because things are selling for such a high amount, even the shitholes. It can sometimes be a challenge, even after you fix the house up to make the money that you need to make it to even make it worth your time, let alone actually make any money at all. The guy who's at the country club or the doctor or somebody who is busy, a dad or whatever, and they want to get into flipping, there are a lot of resources out there that make it seem like, oh, okay, flips can work. This is a quick 30 grand, quick 60 grand or whatever. It is quick, but it's not. And it's a lot of time. I get a lot of people every year who come to me and say, hey, I want to get into flipping, that type of thing. You need to be very understanding, very cognizant of the pros and cons of flipping. Yes, the money is quick and it is a short duration period. So the opposite of that is you buy and hold a property for 30 years. It's a very slow profit that's made over time. Flips is the opposite. The problem with flipping is that you get into a situation where you have to manage it. You need great contractors. Usually something you buy as a flip, it's cash only, and you're competing with a lot of other investors. Another thing is a lot of times if it's cash only, you don't get to inspect it. So you get in there, you don't know what you're getting into. So it's a riskier play to get into a flip because you need a lot more appetite for what we call incidentals, which is cash, which is like you get in there. Just before we started recording, I was telling about somebody I know who every time they open up something in this house, it's like, oh, there's old water damage. There's old this, old that. So in the end, flips are much more speculative. Yes, you can gain more money, but you need to be cognizant of the fact that you're going to need a higher appetite to find things that are wrong with the property. You need people who are efficient. And it's also a little risky because you're really at the whims of the market. So if you buy a flip and then 9 months later, you're ready for market, you could be in a whole different environment.
That actually happened with me and a client where like in the middle of the flip, the market started shifting pretty like drastically. It was when the interest rates started like spiking upward. He asked me like, what's the buyer behavior right now? And was like getting a little nervous. And I was like, It's shifting. Yeah, it's shifting. Yep. It's not what it was when you first purchased this property. I mean, we still got what we needed to get for it. Mm-hmm. So it ended up being fine. But it did start taking a big shift and something that was unexpected and wasn't what it was when you first purchased it.
Yeah. And so if you're going to buy a house and rent it for 10 years, 15 years, you can ride out any kind of downturn. And as long as you have tenants in place. So flips are, I would say that if you're like a working professional, you want to get into flipping, you need to be very organized. Or a better thing is to partner with somebody who does this all day, every day, and you just bring the money. So if you bring the capital to the deal, but you're not swinging hammers, you're not loading drywall through the front door on a Sunday afternoon, like you're not doing all these things as strictly a cash play. The next thing is it would be like a buy and hold, which is a typical landlord mom and pop scenario. You find a house. Either it has a tenant in place already, it's just another investor selling to another investor, or you find a property that you're like, hey, I could probably find a tenant for it. Couple things, you definitely want to make sure that the local laws and local ordinances allow for that, especially in HOAs and condos. Most of them will allow a typical 12-month rent situation, but sometimes the neighborhood won't allow for more than a certain amount of rentals and they're already maxed out. So I've had that happen, not with my own clients, but I know I've heard of stories where people are saying, oh, I want to rent it. And they go for the rental application at the township or with the HOA. And they say, oh, no, we're all sold out here.
It's starting to get a lot tighter in Philadelphia, too.
Philadelphia's doing crazy things in all buckets of real estate. But yeah, they're getting more stringent on what you can do. The rental applications are getting more expensive, that type of thing.
And that's more cities across lenient. The country as well. They now protected income as a not protected class, but basically a protected class where you can discriminate against income.
Yeah, and it's harder to
which
get
is
tenants out.
Crazy.
And that's the other thing you should always keep in mind when you go to rent a property. What are the local eviction laws? Now, evicting somebody is the last resort. There are a lot of people out there who can work out things with their landlord. But there are certain boroughs and municipalities and townships and cities across the country that have wide-ranging abilities to get someone out of their house. Some people just squat. Even after a court order, they can squat. You need to be armed with a good real estate attorney, good real estate professionals. It's a great way to make money. And I've been shitting all over real estate investment until now. But I think that buying and holding is a great long-term play. One of the big mistakes people make is they're like, if I get a house and my mortgage payment is $2,000 and then I can only rent it for $2,100, is it worth it? And I think too many people look at it as I'm only making $100 a month. So why would I do it? But there's other ways. You get all the tax advantages where you can deduct and talk to your accountant, but you can deduct a lot of your mortgage interest, just like a normal house. But then also you can take all the maintenance and repairs and deduct those because you're an investor.
That was going to be my point is, so yeah, say that you are only profiting $100 a month off of it. And because I got this advice from a different investor that I have, is he always says to people, if you're going to think about investing into getting rentals, it's to make sure that you have more than one so that you have more income coming in from them. Because the second that you need a major repair in one of your rentals, your entire profit margin is just gone.
And that's right. You want to try to buy it right. You want to try to get it at a good price. But in those first years, it's okay not to make a million gazillion dollars off of it. The idea here is that your mortgage payment will stay relatively stable, but over time, your rental rate will go up. So if you buy in year one for $2,000 a month payment, you're charging $21. But then in 3 years, you're charging $25, $2,600. That overall, on top of price appreciation, the tax benefits. Every single time that your tenant pays rent and you apply it to your mortgage, you're getting equity in the house. So there's a lot of different ways you can make money. And the big mistake that a lot of investors make, first time investors make, is they just look at that delta between the payment and their lease and what they can rent it for. It's not the only consideration.
And make sure it's rentable. There's people who, and we talked on this very briefly last episode, but people were saying that they, if they go to move, then they're going to keep their house to be able to rent it out. But I've told a couple people, sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't make sense to rent out your house. Could you make money on it? Yes. But is there a demand enough in that specific area and for what you have to rent it out?
Yep.
Maybe not. And then it's, do you have the logistical, some people would say, I want to rent out my house and collect the money, but okay, who's going to manage it? Who's going to be taking care of the power if there's some sort of outage or some sort of issue in the middle of the night or the heat goes out? And are you going to get out of bed and you going to go over and do it? Do you have the contractors to be able to do it? Do you want to be a landlord? Do you want to take on everybody else's problems plus your own?
Yeah.
It's a lot of things that people don't normally think about too. And I think more people should.
Yeah.
Because it's now twice in the past 2 months, sellers have asked me, I might want to rent my property out and not sell it when they're looking to buy. I will do the work. I will show you what it would rent for. I will show you those comps and I will help you make the most decision that makes most financial sense for sure.
Yeah.
But again, does the income outweigh the amount of work that's going to go into actually managing a rental and somebody living in your home?
Yeah. I'm having this conversation right now with a client and she can make a decent little bit of money never renting out. She's going to move and she could make a little bit of money, but she's like, I just don't want to deal with it. I think there's a part of the psychology there where it's just this house has served its purpose and I don't want anything to do with it anymore. I just want to take my equity and go. Keep in mind too, if you do have a house that you want to turn into a rental, you are then technically subject to capital gains when you go sell it versus a primary house. So if you go sell your house, you don't pay to capital gains up until 250 for a single person, 500,000 for a couple. Which is another topic we should get into about why a lot of people aren't selling their house. But in the end, it's like once you file taxes and you start claiming that as an investment property on your tax return, sometimes that can kick it into a different class. So I explain it to my client. I'm like, listen, even if you wait a year or two, then you decide that you don't want to have this rental or you want access to that cash, it can be susceptible to capital gains versus you just sell it now, just take your money and be done. And this is a property that's not going to appreciate a ton. So the idea of waiting it out and hoping for two more years of appreciation, it's not that much. Certainly not enough to overcome a massive capital gains. So that's another piece to keep in mind. And that's a conversation I think that's going to be had as interest rates come down. There's going to be a lot more of those conversations. Well, I can afford to hold on to this property at my 3%, but do you really want to?
Mm-hmm.
Should you just take the money and run?
Do you need the money?
And listen, if they need the money, they need the money.
Yeah.
The final one that I really want to talk about is what we call the Burr method. And this is really about building a legacy wealth, lots of property. So how people take $250,000 and buy multiple property with it is this way. Burr method stands for buy, rehab, rent, refinance, and then repeat. And so what that's basically a fancy way of saying is you take the same amount of money and you recycle it over and over and over again. So here's the scenario. There's a house that's worth $200,000. Let's say you have $300,000. You got an inheritance or you tap your investments or you tap your home equity of your primary house. You have $300,000. This is very broad numbers. We don't have to overthink it. You buy a house for $200,000 and it needs work. So essentially what you do is you take the 200 grand, you put more money into it. At that point, you rent the property. Then what you do is you take that lease to the bank and you say, listen, I'm technically responsible for this mortgage, but this tenant, as you can see by this lease agreement, is actually subsidizing the payment. So what I'd like to do is give you this lease to demonstrate that I have coverage for the payment, and I'd like to refinance. And what that basically says, I want to pull my money out, my original $200,000 out of the property, and I want to be able to go buy another property. So that is how somebody can take $300,000 and potentially recycle it over and over and over again. Now, the numbers have to work. You can't overspend on the rehab. If it's a total flip gut type deal, it probably won't work. We're talking more like paint and carpet, maybe a new roof, fix up the outside. That
the investor special, paint everything white.
Yeah, everything white and gray and all that good stuff. But that is something where I think until we were able to actually quantify it, people have been doing this forever though. But the Burr method is one of those things I know, like for people who are like 35 to 50, they hear it and it's guys talk about this at the poker tables type thing. It's like, oh yeah, my buddy, he's crushing it in real estate. And everyone's wondering, where the hell does all the money come from? How does he have 7 properties? There are contractors who can barely spell, but they got like 20 properties because they're 60 years old. And all they've been doing is walking into homes and being like, hey, like, you want to sell this house to me? And that's how they've done it, is they basically, they take a chunk of cash and they keep recycling it through. I know a guy in Roxborough, he owns 25 properties and he's 62. He's not a sophisticated guy. He's a plumber. He's just a guy who's been walking and he's just seen opportunity where it's presented itself. So it's a very tried and true strategy. It can work. We can guide you through it. A lot of realtors, if you not lined up 100 realtors, how many realtors do you think would know what the Burr method is? And how many do you think could actually tell you what it was, like what that stood for?
I don't know. Maybe 10.
Maybe 10. Yeah. So I'm thinking like 10, 15%.
Yep.
And they don't teach this stuff. Like brokers don't teach this stuff.
Neither does real estate school.
Real estate school doesn't teach a lot of things.
Doesn't teach a shit.
Doesn't teach a shit. But in the end, it's like understanding these investment like avenues is super important because it can, like, we as a team, and I know Julie would be the same way, we can definitely tell you within a half hour coffee meeting whether it's the right fit or which is the right fit. Let's just say you have $500,000. Which is the best strategy? Do you want to get into house flipping? $500,000 is a good chunk of cash to get into house flipping. Do you want a long-term legacy? You want to use that to buy incrementally a bunch of little rental properties. Now, keep in mind, too, when you do an investment property, if you're disclosing it the correct way to lenders, which you should be doing, we don't endorse or condone mortgage fraud, you need 20 to 25% down for a property. So this is another thing that I talk to people. They're like, I bought my house for 5% down.
That's because it's primary residence.
Because it's a primary residence. But the guidelines,
that's where the 20% myth is correct, is if you're investing.
That's absolutely right. So a lot of people, a lot of guys who've never bought an investment property, they bought their house with 5% down, or their first time home buyers, they bought 3% down. They're like, yeah, honey, like if we get this $200,000 inheritance, add those 500,000, I mean, God, we could buy 8, 9 properties, whatever. It's like, no. The guidelines, the lending guidelines, if you're not paying cash for your houses, the lending guidelines require 20, 25% because all lending is based on risk. So especially like a first-time investor, a regular investor, a guy who owns multiple properties, been doing it for decades, that's a bank is going to be like, you know what, just call us when you're ready. Mm. We'll give you the money. That's different. But generally, the people that have been asking me this question are not experienced investors, and they want to get in the game for that passive income. Those are the three big buckets. Other buckets are Airbnb, which is really the same as like a buy and a hold.
Well, they emphasize that you have to call them short-term rentals.
Short-term rentals. I'm sorry. It's like, yeah, the Xerox of real estate. but like Airbnbs, it's just a different application, but it's essentially the same thing as a buy and hold. The numbers have to work right, the same as any other investment. And then there's syndication, which is something that I actually think is a good option for a lot of people who don't know, wouldn't know a hammer if it hit them over the head. They don't want to deal with toilets. They don't want to deal with property management. They don't want to deal with anything. And the real estate syndication is essentially a group of people who get together, crowdsource their money, and go buy something like nice and big, like a big multifamily, 100 unit, 40 unit, even like a 10-plex.
Mm-hmm. That would fall into the category of then you're getting to commercial.
yeah, you're getting into commercial real estate, but you basically, there's like a, what are called general partners, and then there's limited partners. So general partner is the person who like finds the property. They do all the due diligence. They engage the seller. They do everything. And then the limited partners, which is, would be most of the people listening to this podcast, those are like the people that are putting the money up. And then limited means that they have limited rights. They can't pull out. They can't claim the whole place for themselves. They've got certain rights and everything under that provision. But it's a great way to park money, not have to do a thing, and just get residual income. So that's like a whole other bucket as well.
Silent partner.
Like a silent partner. That's right. Does it feel like a good overview?
I think that covered a lot about investments.
That did. Listen, guys, there is no straight line with investing, and there's no one size fits all. There's lots of different avenues you can go. If anyone here has questions about anything specific or specific to their case, like, it's definitely better to take that offline, have a coffee meeting with us. Jen works with investors. Actually, I think you work with investors now more than I do.
Wow. Which,
yeah, I mean,
it's the same couple. I'm really selective with the investors that I work with too, though, because I have a fine line between with the investment space. I specialize in residential real estate because I really, really, really love the people side of it, and that it makes such an impact in people's lives. And then investment space, like, the number one and most important thing to me is that people are getting into places safe. And I won't work with investors that are cutting corners mm-hmm. and that are like skimping out on things that like need to get done to save a dollar. So the people that I do work with, I make sure that it is because they're doing the right thing yeah. for the people who are going to be moving into it.
Ethical people.
Yeah. Who make the right choices and will spend the little bit extra to prioritize like a more quality. Mm-hmm. We're primarily with flips on that side of investments too. Yeah. So
I don't work with a lot of flippers. And so Jen does. So we make a good team. We cover a lot of bases. So if that's something you guys are interested in, it's a sandbox.
And if you actually, something you didn't mention too. So like with flips, so with my clients who do flips, I'm involved throughout the process. Like mm-hmm. when I help them get it and then we go to sell it. If he's trying in the middle of like making a decision, and he's pretty seasoned, he knows what he's doing, but he's open to listening to the opinions of realtor to be able to have me come in. I'll go through, walk through while like it's still being worked on and give them the customer perspective. What are you seeing with buyers and what they are preferring now? Things change.
Yep.
So to be able to have your agent come in through the process to make sure that things that you're doing are going to be equitable and sellable.
Yeah. So I think that's a good rundown of everything with investing. Like I said, there's so many opportunities out there. There's so many avenues you can go, and it really depends. It's like everything else. Any other investment, it has to just suit your needs mm-hmm. and your appetite for risk.
Yep.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
Okay. Catch you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Millennia. For more information or to connect with us directly, you can always get a hold of us on Instagram at Millennia Podcast LLN, or through each of our pages at Janusky Gets It Done or at Ask Seth Anything. Until next time, keep moving up. Later.